Ron Ananian.
You know, actually, Tom, I'm a very famous person. Did you know that?
Who are you?
Yeah, I had a couple of people tell me that this week. It was really kind of funny. I mean, she said, you're famous like Kim Kardashian, and that kind of killed the mood.
The Car Doctor.
If the electric car becomes so mainstream, the gasoline station on the corner where we go to get gas, you know, they're there to sell gas. How are they going to dispense gasoline to us and justify the expense?
Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
All right, listen, there's two things we're going to do right off the bat. Number one, we're going to let Tom know that he's got to give the book away this hour. You hear me, Tom?
I'm reading it. 50
years of Nissan Z. We're giving it away this hour. Come on.
Right. I'm only 25 years into it. Come on.
I understand that, but you know, I can't blame your education. I can't let your education slow down the process here. So that's number one. So anybody that calls in this hour is eligible. So just let's move this book along. Because Tom, you got to see the book I got after this. I've got a book about the mid-engine Corvette that I want to give away.
Ooh.
Yeah, and that one's really like wow. So it's just neat. These book giveaways are great. So we got to do that. So that's number one. Then number two, Dodge writes in, and he wrote in 2 weeks ago, and I keep meaning to get to this. Is it Dodge or Donge? D-O-N-G-E. I think it's Donge. I think we call him Dodge though. I think he's down in Virginia or Delaware, somewhere down that way. He's asking this question. Hey Tom, if a person was pumping fluid out via the transcooling line and pouring new fluid in through the transfill tube, how do you keep the correct fluid level? He says, mostly peaceful, Dodge. So we'll call him Dodge. Dodge wants to know about transfluid levels. We were talking about doing a poor man's transfluid exchange using the cooler lines. The idea is, and the fluid doesn't come zooming out, but you know, if you're pouring in while you're going, as long as, and even if the trans ran low, it's only going to sputter, but you don't have any heat load on the trans, you're not engaged, you're not going anywhere, and you're not running it dry. Believe me, you'd have to really not be prepared to run this thing dry, and you're not so worried about level as you are. Just as long as you've got fluid coming out, you're okay. Once the fluid, you know, the dirty fluid is out and you're now getting clean fluid, the idea is shut the vehicle off, hook your cooler lines back up, all right, and now start to fill the trans. Now, you've got to keep in mind, if you ran the trans to the point where the cooler line started to sputter and spit, you've got to assume the trans is fairly low. So for conversation's sake, if it was a 12-quart transmission, I'd assume there's 2 quarts in there. I'd put in 4. Run it and check it. Nothing on the stick, I'd put in 2. Run it and check it. Okay? And you'll find if you do that, you're probably going to put between 8 and 10 quarts in a 12-quarter. You kind of creep up on it. And, you know, that's how you'll know so you don't overfill. But that's basically it. We've done it this way for years as the poor man's way to do a transfluid exchange on cars that we may or may not be able to get into with the machine. And it works fine. Again, you're not looking to put a heat load on the trans. You're not running it till it's scalding hot. You're not running it dry with it sputtering for any length of time. So the chance of an issue is minimal at best. And I've never lost a trans doing it this way. So I hope that answers it for you. Anyway, we good to go, Tom? You ready to do a radio show this hour?
Ready to rock?
Okay, I'm ready to rock. Where are you going to send me? Brian in New Jersey?
Yes, sir. We're going to keep you in New Jersey right now.
Let's go there. Let's go to Brian in New Jersey, 20 Cadillac Escalade. Brian, welcome aboard, sir. How can I help?
Hi, Ron. Yes, just as you said, 2020 Escalade. Love your show. Thanks a lot for taking my call. So I have a, like I said, 2020 Escalade, and it's brand new. And it's my first GM vehicle.
Okay.
I've had Chryslers for a long time. I've always had the 5.7 Hemi, and I know your stance on Chryslers, but I really never had any problems with them. Got them up to like 200,000 miles, but I do change oil religiously,
right,
and you know, transmission fluid religiously, so yep. I definitely maintain them.
Yep.
Anyway, I'm looking to get the most out of this car, and when I'm looking online for just common problems, common issues, carbon cleaning is a big thing that comes up. And then some of the preventative items are things that you mentioned before, such as Berryman and the spray can, I guess, through the induction method of cleaning it, as well as I'm seeing a lot of stuff on catch cans. High-quality catch cans, clean-side catch can. So I'm just trying to get some ideas of, you know, what I can do to maintain it. You know, if I did the spray treatment, you know, before every oil change, is a catch can a good idea? If I do the catch can, do I get a clean-side catch can? And anything else that maybe, you know, goes along with the GM, the 6.2 engine. I've also heard that, you know, maybe the 6.2 engine had been redesigned in the past couple of years to kind of prevent the carbon buildup, but I only saw that in one area. So, again, not familiar with GMs too much and just trying to get the most out of the engine the longest life I can.
You know, obviously doing, fuel system maintenance in the way of an additive in the tank every oil change or at least once a month is a great idea. All right. If you can find Berryman, let's get Berryman. All right.
Okay.
Let's, you know what? I like Berryman. I think Berryman makes some of the best product out there. It's just, depending upon where you are, you may find it on Amazon. You may find it at O'ReillyAuto.com, depending. But the Berryman Hest formula works great. Great stuff. With a GDI engine, and that's what that caddy is, that's gasoline direct injection.
Yeah, this is what's new for me.
Right. So it used to be where the injector sat behind the intake valve. And this just isn't GM. This is all the car companies. Mm-hmm. Now they've moved the injector underneath the intake valve so it sprays directly into the cylinder.
Yeah, so nothing cleans off the valve.
So nothing cleans off the valve. So, you know, even Berryman in the tank, as good as Berryman is, it's never going to get a chance to get a shot at the valve, hence the induction cleaning. That's why you want to do an induction cleaning, because that's going to go down the throat of the intake and clean the back of the valve, all right? It's getting to the point where we're doing two types of fuel system cleanings on GDI cars. And I've started this within the last year, where as they get older, and you're not there yet, induction should be fine for you. It's a little bit of a science project in the works, if you understand my meaning, in that, you know, you're going to do an induction cleaning, I think, at 50,000, and you're going to do an injection cleaning at 50,000. You're going to tie into the fuel rail. You're going to clean both sides, all right? Part of the reason why you want to do the injection cleaning, even though most cars today, a lot of the cars today, have self-cleaning injectors, is you're still going to have some contaminant in there and flush out. But you also want to be able to, if you can, you also want to be able to do a cleaning with regards to the induction. So you want to do it both ways, both sides, and, make it work like that. The other maintenance things, obviously, you know, regular scheduled oil changes, make sure the oil you're using meets and exceeds manufacturer spec, read the label on the bottle. If you want some really good oil change information or oil spec information, take a look at Liqui Moly, get out the Liqui Moly, liqui-moly.com, I believe it is. And, they've got their specs there. You can actually plug the vehicle in, year, make, model, and they'll come up with a spec for that vehicle and explain. You know, they've got really great information there at the Liqui Moly website, liquimoly.com. And, they'll break it down for you. But those are the things that are going to, you know, make it work and give you durability and longevity with that vehicle. You know, these extended oil drain intervals, the lack of maintenance. Remember, car companies don't sell maintenance, they sell cars, and that's what they're trying to get you to do, and I think you're on the right track. You let me know if you need anything else, and by all means, we're here for you. Let me do an email real quick. Let me get this out of the way. I've been trying to do this. I'm not sure where he is. Tom actually had a... Okay. I want to get this one out of the way. Live radio, folks. Hi, Ron. I got a 2010 Kia Optima, four-cylinder with an auto trans. It's got 109,000 miles, mostly original trans fluid. I say mostly because it had a drain and a fill at about 80,000 miles. Tom, if you're there, just cut right in. My GM world-class technician friend will do the exchange and believes in only using genuine Kia SP3 fluid. It doesn't break the bank at $860 a quart. The manual specifies Diamond ATF SP3, SK ATF SP3 and other brands, meaning SP3 specs, not very specific. Bottom line, he says, Other brands that meet this spec are Aisin, Idemitsu, which I believe is the OEM supplier, and Enos, all slightly less expensive than the Kia branded stuff. What are your thoughts on any of these brands? And additionally, what do you think of using a Wix trans filter rather than paying twice as much for a Kia original? I think you're fine with the Wix trans filter. I really do. I don't see the need to spend money on the Kia. I don't think you're going to have to do that. All right. So stay with the Wix. You'll be fine. As far as what fluid to use, Idemitsu is the original trans fluid supplier. And I think you're fine with that. All Kia is doing is buying it from Idemitsu and rebranding it in their own package. So you know what? If you can save a few bucks, why not? Aisin, I'm not familiar with as a brand of fluid. As long as it meets Kia spec and it says SP3 on it, I'm okay with it, though. But your question is about Idemitsu. Is it the OEM supplier? Yes, it is. And, you know, that'll work just fine, Soria. So let's make that work, and, you know, you'll be good. Just follow the normal procedure. You hear me talking about doing a trans cooler line with regards to doing the exchange itself. And, you know, you'll be fine. Well, I think we lost Tom, guys. So let's see what we got to do here. Let's do this email from Amish. Ron, I appreciate the podcast and the effort you guys put into the show. I forgot to ask on the call. This is from a few weeks ago. We actually had a call here that Amish had called in on. And we were talking about car questions. He's got two cars, a 2003 Lexus ES300 with 230,000 miles on it, a 2012 Sienna XLE with 75,000 miles. He replaced belts. He flushed out the power steering fluids, coolant, brake fluids. And let's see, he replaced the valve cover. He found a lot of baked on oil residue on the engine, changed the oil multiple times with 10% seafoam. And let's see, blah, 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 synthetic or synthetic blend or a regular school oil, 3,000 miles car runs. What are your recommendations on fluids only or an OE equivalent, as I did use Valvoline ATF for transmission drained and fluid going back and forth once? So, okay. Yeah, so let's see. Any preventative measures I should use in this? Let's see. Da-da-da-da. Yeah. Listen, you're on the right track. You're doing your fluid changes. You're doing everything you're supposed to do. You're doing, you know, what you've got is working. So I would say, how much should I train in fluid? Listen, doing a fluid exchange or a fluid change on that Toyota at least every, 50,000 miles, WS fluid, I think you'll be fine. So by all means, do that. And, you know, you'll keep that thing going through college as you recommend. As far as an oil train interval, it's a very convoluted email here. As far as an oil drain interval on the other car, let's see, you're asking about oil residue. Berryman makes a really good oil flush, and you can find more at the Berryman website, berrymanproducts.com, and you can use that in the vehicle to help flush out the old oil residue and, you know, make that work as well. So, you know, that will do it for you there. Amish, I appreciate the email. We're going to keep going here, listeners. Let's see. David writes in, "Hey, Ron, love the show. I want to give you kudos for the subtle homage to Rush when you opened the show last week." Did we do that? I think we did. Son of a gun. And, you know, let's tell you what, let's hold this email. I think Tom's back from whatever happened. I'm sure there's a good story here. I hope I keep everybody entertained and danced on the stove there for a good 5 minutes. I'm going to assume I can pull over and take a pause. Tom, why don't you start running the music?
You know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school feels a lot like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly everything just clicks. Getting on that path may be easier than you think. A good place to start? Go to findsomethingnew.org. At findsomethingnew.org, you have access to resources that help develop new skills. Skills that will position you for careers in today's growing industries. From healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Plus, you can take advantage of online courses, certification programs, apprenticeships, and more. So you can take yourself from unemployed and uncertain to empowered and prepared for what's next. Find your path to a new career today. Visit findsomethingnew.org. A message from the Ad Council.
Okay, men, this is your time. Maybe you didn't choose this, but you're here now. You're gonna go out there and be an all-star caregiver. It's up to you. So what are you gonna do? You're gonna go grocery shopping, cook, clean, be there emotionally and physically. You gotta dig deeper. Drive them to physical therapy, doctor's appointments. Don't you forget about the pharmacy. I know you won't, because that's what caregivers do. Don't give up. Don't ever give up. This is your time to show the world, your family, and yourself that you're tougher than tough. Now go out there and be the best caregiver this world has ever seen. Caregiving is tougher than tough. Find the care guides you need at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
That's right. If you call and we're not live, you can leave a message and we'll call you back to get you on the air with Ron. 855-560-9900. Speaking of Ron, here he is.
All right, listen, before I go and finish David's email, I'll come back to David's email. Let me get to Brian in Duluth, Minnesota. He's been waiting, that's Duluth, Minnesota, I think that is. He's been waiting up there very patiently. Brian, welcome aboard, sir. You want to talk about Z cars, I understand.
I'm a Z guy, and I was kind of interested in your take on them. I have a 1971 240 that I bought in the fall of 82 after I graduated, the year I graduated, and I still have that car. And they're just a fun car and with a lot of performance, and I was kind of interested in your take on them.
I think that the Z car was really the early ones are forgotten and underrated because I think they were phenomenal. I remember the original 240Z. My late father-in-law had one, and the only reason we didn't pay that much attention to the 240Z was because his other car was a Maserati Merak, it was like, which car did I want to work on first? But when I fixed the Maserati, that's when I think they took me into the family. But, the 240Z has just got such a long legacy of history. And, it took square aim at the Corvette back in the 70s and the 80s. And I think it was direct competition for it. And I think that's what helped drive that car into the marketplace like it was. It's not the same car today. Now, Nissan, still has their performance car. They've got, and I can't think of the model now. Now I'm going to have a brain freeze. But
they do have the 370Z. They came back with the 350
right.
And then now the 370.
Right. And then they've got something which isn't a Z above that. I forget what Nissan has. It'll come to me. I'll remember it after we're off the air. But, the Z cars... The Z cars really are something that, we don't talk a lot about it. A lot of people don't. They look at the new ones and they don't realize what created that and where that came from.
So true.
Hey, Brian, I'll tell you what. Stay on the line. Tom gave me the thumbs up. We're going to be sending you out Nissan 50 Years of Exhilarating Performance by Pete Evanow. That's going to be your book. So wait on the line. Let Tom get your information. We're glad to give it to a Z guy of all. And we appreciate you calling in to talk to us today. And thanks for waiting there on the line while we worked our way through our problems. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. Don't go away.
Why, this car is automatic. It's systematic. It's hydromatic. Why, it's greased lightning.
Hey, welcome back. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. I think we have to address last hour. Tom's going to yell at me. He's going to yell at me anyway. You know what,
yes.
Tom? That was,
yes.
And I can actually put a positive spin on that because that was kind of humorous in a way once I knew what was going on. in that the internet
it wasn't humorous for me because I was sitting here and all of a sudden all three of my screens disappeared and my internet service went bye-bye, but yet I still had you incoming and we were off the air nationally. The whole bit, everything gone.
Really?
Yep, and then all of a sudden it just popped back in. I'm like, really?
So the whole time I was talking, were we there?
Part of the time.
Wow.
Yeah.
So here's my take on all this, all right? Imagine if that was an electric car trying to get a signal from the internet.
Oh, yeah.
What happens?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you would have just run into a phone pole.
Right. So, you know, where's the redundancy in the backup? Where are they? How are they going to make that work? I just don't see it. I just don't see it. So, but anyway, that was my thought.
And unfortunately, in this neck of the woods with internet stuff, I don't have any backup because my other choice is a slow DSL line that couldn't support anything that we do here. So,
right. Well, listen, how often does it happen?
Not that often, but I do have a guy on hold. I need to get his information, and you'll have a call in a minute. So
okay, so yeah, I'm going to finish up good because I want to finish up my email from David. Back at the end of our debacle there, we were doing an email from David. Hey, Ron, love the show. He liked, we used Rush's opening monologue there, or montage, 2 weeks ago. Yep. Car question. We recently bought a 2015 Explorer XLT with 138,000 miles on it. The wife loves it, but I'm wondering how reliable are these long term? One thing I keep reading about is the timing chain driven water pump. Is this something I need to be deathly afraid of and replace it ASAP, or is it not as common a failure as the internet makes it out to be? Thanks for the show and keep up the good work. Well, first of all, we know how reliable or unreliable the internet is. So I don't know if we want to put any stock in that. You know, a 15 Explorer with a $130, $138 on it. You know, listen, the cop cars go to 200,000 miles. You got to do some maintenance to it. If it hasn't been done yet, by all means, yeah, it's time to think about doing a water pump because they are a common failure. And, you know, every car's got a weak link, right? We talk about this all the time. Every car's got a weak link. Every car's got its albatross. And on the Explorers of that generation, it's going to be the power takeoff unit leaks down under on the right side of the axle seal going out over the top of the exhaust. The PTU unit leaks. And the water pumps are abysmal. They're buried inside the motor, and they're timing chain driven. So to do them, in a lot of cases, a lot of these vehicles, some of them you can do in the vehicle. Most of them you're ending up pulling the engine out. And what happens is at 138,000 miles or 100,000 miles, these fail between 100 and 150 is where they start to leak. I've seen them as early as 80. And, you know, it gets to be expensive. You know, it's, let's see, the best I've ever seen that job for a water pump parts, labor, coolant is about $2,300. And then you go and do, if you do timing chains, if you do the guides, if you do any of the timing chain components, I've seen that job go out the door at about $3,300. You add about $1,000 in material and extra labor. So, you know, is it worth it? Yeah, I think so. Because where are you going to get a car for $3,000? You know, it's that Explorer today, a new Explorer is a $50,000, $60,000 vehicle. So if she likes it, you know, the engines themselves. Now, 2 points. Number one, what kind of shape is the oil in? Have the oil changes been done? What does the dipstick show you? What does it look like? That's number one. And number two, it's possible that the water pump has already been done. It would be kind of, to 138, 7 years old. It might have been done already. So you may want to have a mechanic look at it. Can he tell if the covers have been off? You know, does anything look disturbed? And make a decision from there. But if you have any doubt, you know what? Better to do it now rather than do it later and be sorry because it does come at the worst possible time. So, but other than that, they're good vehicles, David. They really are. And I appreciate your comments and, you know, listening to the podcast while you're building lobster traps. Ah, beautiful Maine. I can see the imagery in my head. Let's go over to Jerry in Minnesota. And Jerry wants to comment about electric cars. Electric cars seem to be a hot button topic. Jerry, welcome aboard, sir. What's on your mind?
Hi, Ron.
Yes, sir.
Hey, I'm going to I'm going to need a propane furnace in my electric car. Can I get that from the factory, or am I going to have to install it myself?
Yeah. Well, and what's going to happen to the guy in Minnesota when, you know, your battery, your electric consumption has to be higher, right? Because
with my heater on, if I went to the mailbox, my batteries would be drained by the time I got home.
Right. So where are they going to get these cars from? You know, it's almost like you wonder, are they lying to us? You know, do they know something we don't know with regard to, you know, they've got technology somewhere that you know, you know, are they having problems somewhere that I don't know. You know, what are they thinking is my point. And
what about the rare metals that go into the electric cars? Nobody's talking about those either. We don't have the corner on the market like Red China does.
Well, I'll tell you what, the components for the battery of the electric vehicle, actually come out of North Africa. Okay? That's where all the components that make the lithium ion battery is. And, you know, you hear stories that, unfortunately, the componentry is in the parts of North Africa where there are terrorist regimes have control over. You know, it was the last I heard the story. Matter of fact, Paul Eisenstein of the Detroit Bureau was telling us this the last time he was here. That, you know, so this is going to become a political hot potato. And, you know, that we're betting on this as to be the problem solver in 15 years, I don't get it. I talked to, in the first hour I was talking about, I had a call out to AES Wave. They're a company out in California, out in Fresno that, you know, sells diagnostic test equipment and leads and scope stuff. And I had to order a few things this week, and I was talking to Scott, one of the sales guys out there that I talk to on a regular basis. And I, you know, what's your feeling on this, Scott? Where do you see the electric cars going? And, you know, he goes, I don't understand how we're going to supply electricity. He says he's lived in California all his life. He's in his, you know, mid to late 30s now. And he said every summer we have electrical shutdowns, brownouts, power offs, you know, because of air conditioning. We don't have enough electricity now to power air conditioners. Now we're going to power cars. You know, so I don't know how we're going to do it. I really don't. But not the reason why, you know.
Do the electric cars have heaters in them right now?
They do. They've got heating. They got air conditioning. They've got radio. But, you know, we're talking about a vehicle. There are no $25,000, $30,000 electric vehicles to speak of that are of decent quality. They're all in that, you know. I hear stories about the base Tesla that starts out at 35 and goes up to 60 in a heartbeat. Oh, you want an interior. Oh, you want a seat that's comfortable. Oh, you want, you know, bigger tires. You want a color different than white, I think it is. All of a sudden, it becomes a very expensive proposition. So, you know, as I've said, you wonder where the masses or how the masses are going to afford an electric vehicle. You know, doesn't make any sense. So
that's all I got.
Yeah, no, that's it. I understand your concern, Jerry. Listen, we're going to all take the ride. We're all going to watch. We're going to see what happens, and we'll go from there. Hey, listen, it's all part of the change. You know, they must have a master plan somewhere. We're just going to be part of it. We'll see what happens. I appreciate the call. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. Welcome back. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. You know, I know electric cars are such a big hot topic button, and, you know, all of your comments are very much appreciated. And I have to sum it up that, yeah, it doesn't make sense, right? Like so many of us and all of you, I haven't had anybody call in and say, hey, bring on electric cars. They're great. And I'm not trying to sit here and say, hey, I don't think electric cars are a thing of the future. I haven't said they're a bad idea. In that the technology, I'm just saying, where's the technology going to come from? How are we going to support this? on an all-electric car environment. And that's the part I don't get. And then I was thinking about, you know, and I used this in my opening comments on last hour's show, in that, you know, what's going to happen? You think about it. Anybody born this year will be in an electric vehicle. They'll probably not have the opportunity to go out and buy an internal combustion engine vehicle new by the time they get around to driving age. And then I started thinking about what's going to be driving age. You know, are they going to need a driver's license when they turn 16, 17, 18? Will they still get them? And then how are the states going to support revenue? Where's that going to come from? You know, what's that going to look like? And I did a little research. And, you know, maybe there's a bigger plan here, not to make this sound like black helicopter conspiracy time. But since the 90s here in New Jersey, and this is interesting, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 motor vehicle agencies in North Jersey are gone. And the issue is now you can only go to certain agencies for licenses. You can only go to certain agencies for registration. You can only go to certain agencies for state lane inspection. It's a very bizarre setup. And it makes you wonder, you know, are they making a shift in how they're doing motor vehicle agencies from 20 years ago? Were they looking this far down the road? Are they going to need as many agencies as they even have now? Who's going to need a driver's license? You'll always have to register a vehicle, I guess. Maybe you'll have to get a use permit to be able to use an electric vehicle because, you know, when the electric vehicle gets set up, they're one step away from self-driving. And when you get self-driving, you know, the game's over. You know, you're not gonna need a license to go and, you know, do what you have to do. And then I think, as we all witnessed this hour, right, internet died. We had 3 minutes of dead air here on the show today, and I apologize for that again. But if that was a self-driving car receiving a signal, what is it going to operate on? Geographic location, known memory value. It knew where it was the last time it was on that street. So that street didn't change in construction, so now it's going to program and drive the same path. How would that work, and what would that look like? I just wonder. You know, it's an awful lot of things are going to have to change in order for this to work. And, you know, it's becoming more and more of an issue. So, but in any event, 855-560-9900. And I think we'll pull over, take a pause for the cause. And when we come back, we'll finish up. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. Don't go away. We're back right after this. Just like a picture, she was laying there, moonlight dancing off her hair. She woke up and took me by the hand. Hey, welcome back. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. I see Jerry from Wisconsin's got one more comment about electric cars. Jerry, is this you again?
Yes.
Go ahead.
But I was just on the topic, why couldn't there be a second battery cell and then have a transfer case or a PTO that could run a generator? And just like we used to switch fuel tanks from right to left, you could switch batteries from, you know, right to left and always have something charged. You'd never have to stop and there wouldn't be more energy needed.
Well, it's possible, but, you know, second battery, transfer case, PTU, more weight, more expense. And where's all this money going to come from?
Now, vehicles to begin with. But.
Yeah, it's now what I think is going to happen. The only thing that makes sense to me, unless, you know, the aliens come down from outer space and give us technology that we're really looking for, is what I had read and heard years ago is the way to make electric cars that will work, and the way that they will make them work is you will see gas stations slowly converted into gas and electrification stations, and you will pull into a gas electrification station and somebody will hot swap your battery. They'll have a battery charged up. It'll be a standard battery size. It'll be like a big giant cassette. In, you know, out, in, boom, reset,
yep. Five
done.
Five minutes.
Yep. You know, what does it take to put gas in a car? 3 to 5 minutes. Yep. So if they can do a battery swap in 3 to 5 minutes, but, you know, my questions become the expense. My questions become, you know, how rigorously are we going to have to test these batteries? And, you know, how many cars pull into a gas station in an hour in a busy time?
Oh, yeah.
100?
Right.
So on an 8-hour shift, you're going to go through 800, 1,000 batteries?
Correct. And then who owns them when they're junk, you know?
Right. And then who stores them? You know, you're going to have to, but you're still going to have to charge them. Right?
Correct.
You're still going to have the capacity to charge these.
That's what I was thinking, something on board that could charge it, you know, your secondary battery, but yeah, right. I don't.
Yeah, I.
I'll just keep putting gas in the pickup.
I really have to believe and hope that we're going to come to our senses. We got 15 years and that somebody's going to pull us back from this precipice and say, wait a minute, whoa. You know what? Electric cars have their place. Electric cars can do some good, depending on how it's structured. But to go all electric all the time, all across the board, I don't know. Somebody's got to have some kind of technology up their sleeve, because I just don't see it. And then we'll talk next week about who's going to fix them. That's a whole nother conversation. This time, till the next time, I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, reminding you, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.